Welcome to Executing the Vision podcast. I'm your host, Brad Hunter, president of Emerge Labs. On the podcast, we'll get to know the person behind the vision, their successes, their challenges, and their plans for the future. If you're interested in becoming a guest or know someone who might be a good fit, stick around to the end and we'll discuss how to apply. Now, enjoy the show. Everybody, today we've got Pete Moore with Simplifying Entrepreneurship. Hi, Pete. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to focus more on the story of just how you got to where you are. When I saw your name come across and started looking at everything, it was one of those, oh my God, I cannot wait to talk to this guy. A lot of the things that you do, and when I look back through a lot of your things, just very similar to a lot of things that I do. So just very excited to talk and learn more about you. But let's start with the idea of, like I said, tell me your story. Tell me about growing up. Where are you from? What was life like as a child?
Yeah. To put it in short format, I had a great upbringing, my great parents, very supportive. And my dad ran a large construction company. He didn't own it, but he was a general manager of it. And my mom looked after my sister and I going through school. So she was a stay-at-home mom, but she was really entrepreneurial. She was making crafts and selling them at art stores. And she was always had some little way to make money and all this kind of stuff. And so I think my sort of entrepreneurial side of things probably came from my mom, and my sort of business management and all that type stuff came from my dad. And so I grew up, a lot of my relatives are farmers. A lot of them are business owners. And so I really came up surrounded around business owners. And it's been my entire life. I've really only ever worked for anybody for 6 months, which was actually my dad's best friend who I was named after. His name was Peter. And I worked for him for about 6 months. And he said, Peter, you're meant to be on your own. And I said, I agree. So after university, I worked for him for a short while and got a couple of project things done that he wanted done. And then went on my way, bought my first franchise, which was a bathroom renovation company that I owned from 94 to 97, or sorry, to 2007. And along that journey, I had another franchise that we had bought, which was a cleaning franchise. And we bought it with 30 customers and built it over 10 years to 300 and sold it. Became a business broker, helping people buy and sell businesses, which is how I found the business that I currently own, which is called Shoetopia. We own a couple of shoe stores here, and I've had those since 2010. And so I get to all the stuff that I do with my coaching and with my sort of all the platforms and things that I work with Simplifying Entrepreneurship, I get to test and try and work on in my own businesses. So I really like that piece of the puzzle too.
Okay. And so now you grew up in Ontario, Canada, correct? In rural, farm kind of area?
Rural and urban. We lived in Ottawa proper, which is our nation's capital. And we had a farm about half an hour outside of town that pretty much during the week, because my dad ran a construction company and he was gone 12 hours a day and he didn't want to commute as well. During the week, we pretty much lived in the city. And then for most part on the weekends and whatever else we could, we were out on the farm. So a little bit of both, snowmobiling and dirt biking and playing hockey and all the things like Canadian kids do.
Yeah, shoot. I think most kids dream of the idea of spending their weekends out at the farm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you grew up there. Now you go to college. And then what were you studying in college?
I took business.
Okay. You know, so it was coming into college. It was pretty well understood that
I had small businesses all through high school, grass cutting and landscaping and little things like that along the way, ever since I was a kid, really, and continued that through university. And then when I came out of university, as I had mentioned, I went ahead, bought my first franchise, went down to Atlanta for 2 weeks training and got my ropes in and all that kind of stuff. And then came back and I'm like, geez, you know what? I think I can do this better than the franchise can in a lot of cases. I needed to know the skills of how to refinish bathtubs and stuff. They did a good job teaching that. They didn't do a great job of teaching business acumen. And it's really interesting as I look at a lot of franchises over my career. But this one, they sold 300 franchises. I was number 20. And by the time 5 years was in, I think they were down to about 40 that still were living and still actually working and had a go of it. And everybody else failed. Franchises a lot of times are great things, but sometimes aren't so great. And I've experienced sort of both sides of the equation on that one.
And now, okay, so you just got out of college. This was your very first gig. You go to their training.
Yeah.
And so how is it that your very first thing out of college, they have this business that's running, they're teaching you, and right away you have that instinct of, you guys are doing a terrible job of teaching the business side. So where did you, I mean, is that just from your upbringing and your father and your mother and school? Yeah. Like, where did that just come from?
Yeah, I think a good portion of it was, like I said, I grew up in an entrepreneurial sort of background. I realized off the bat, if it was up to me, I would have taken, it was 2 weeks training. So when you think of it, that's not a lot of training. 1 week was, here's your spray gun and here's a bathtub and here's a, we're gonna change the color of the Harvest Gold fridge to white. And we're going to change the green bathtub to white and we're going to spray these kitchen cabinets and all that sort of stuff. So that was great. In my 1 week there, I was able to get enough that I came back and just started testing and trying on everything I could do back here. But from the business side, the 1 week business, I already had a business degree and I already had previous business experience. So that week I was wishing that they would have just taught me more about actually doing my work as opposed to the business side of it, because it was basic.
Yeah. Okay. So now so we start with that business. We move on to the next.
Yeah.
And then now talk to me, I think from looking at there, it looked to me like maybe there was up to seven different businesses that you started on.
Had a few different ones. So the next one, and we had it, ran it in conjunction with, it was, the franchise was called Surface Doctor, but after 5 years and three ownership changes of the franchisor, I bought my franchise out and just called it Surface Medic for the remaining. And it still runs today, 30 years later this August. And I was just, I literally, before we hopped on here, talking to the previous, or to the current owner, who's actually my best man. He bought it off me, but he's still running it and doing really well with it. So it's called Surface Medic now. And then during that time, we also had Sani Service, which in the States was called Swisher Bathroom Services. And that franchise was an interesting franchise that we built and grew as well. It was a struggling franchisee here, not here where I live now, but in Ottawa at the time. And I took it over and got a good deal on it. And then we built it and then sold it again 10 years afterwards. And then that allowed me to carry on and do some of the stuff that I'm doing now. And along the way, like I said, a few other businesses too. We had Sani Mist, which was in the COVID days when everybody was fogging stuff and we were selling foggers and all sorts of different chemicals, because I had the background in that from Sani Service for 10 years. So it was an easy startup for me to start that up during the time when everybody was looking for that sort of stuff. So we did that for a couple of years through COVID. We've also ran liquidation road shows, which are pop-up shows that I'll pool together a whole bunch of retailers, rent an arena floor. And we just, it's like, advertised in the papers and all that sort of stuff. And we'll go into an arena, for example, for a 3-day weekend and heavily advertising. You have 300 people lined up on Saturday morning outside the arena floor to get in and see what kind of deals there are. We've done some of that sort of stuff along the way, have opened a couple of different Shootopia locations. We closed one. We had a failure too, Brad. So it's, life isn't always rosy as an entrepreneur, right? So we did have a failure and it cost us a lot of money. Cost us a lot of hardship and it took us a while to recoup from that. But those are lessons learned along the way too, and all sorts of good and bad things about being a business owner. But one thing I'll tell you is that I wouldn't change it for the world. I love being a business owner and I love talking to business owners. I love talking everything about trials and tribulations and the wins and celebrating the wins and all that kind of good stuff. It's just a real pleasurable thing for me in my coaching career to be able to go through all that stuff and help people, other people, through the issues they're facing.
Yeah. Okay. So what I'd like to talk about now is that transition, right? So you're an entrepreneur at heart from growing up, bunch of different business, one business, get it going. Then it seems like your mind is always, oh, there's another opportunity. And then this is a great opportunity to jump on. So several years opening up different businesses, growing them successfully. And then where was that transition of, now instead of me doing this myself, that idea of, I really should be working and helping other people do this. I've had so many experiences over the years and just have learned so many things. That would be a fun next step to take. Walk me through that process.
Yeah, I think if we take it up to the 50,000 foot level, it's my belief, Brad, that business owners are the backbones of their communities. They're typically, they are the people that employ most of the people in your community. They're typically the volunteers out there on almost any volunteer organization board. They're usually the hockey coaches, the baseball coaches. They're usually the deacons in the church. They're usually the people that are fundraising for the kids' playground down the street. It's really an interesting thing when you dig down into who's getting what done in your community. It's usually a business owner. And as busy as business owners are, they're usually the ones that give back the most, both in their time and in their dollars, towards the betterment of their community and the betterment of the people's lives in the community. And from that perspective, I've felt along the way that if there's some way that I can help create more time for that business owner or create more money for that business owner, that they'll in turn give a portion of that back to their communities. And in some small way, I can affect communities around the areas of the entrepreneurs that I'm working with. And so that's a guiding principle that I have. And I've seen it come true time and time again. And I think, where did all of this start? Most of the people that I know in business have often come to me and asked me opinions all for the last 30 years. What do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? Or how should I do this? Or whatever the case is. I've often been the one being on the other, guiding them along the way as much as I can. And of course, like anything, some people will take that and some people won't. But at the end of the day, about 5-6 years ago, I decided that I would hang my shingle and do it for an occupation as well. I've got my business, Shootopia business, running on rails, basically. And that's what I coach to. So that basically other people are making almost all of the decisions in those two stores without me. I'm not required to be, and I'm here talking to you in the middle of the day, I'm not selling shoes, and I'm not required to be at my stores all the time. I'm not required to open the door. I'm not required for the next purchase order. I'm not required to do the next sales. All of those things are being done without me through the right communication process and accountability that I've set up within our stores, which allows me the freedom to do what I choose to do, which is have these conversations with you or coach other people, because that's my thing that I love to do. As I look at being a business owner, and I often say this to most people that I speak with who are business owners, who are thinking about being a business owner, think about what it is about being a business owner that will make your life better. And if you're not living that now through your business, then you've got some work to do, because your business is supposed to prop up what you want out of your life, not you always propping up your business. And I find that most of the time, a lot of small business owners doing, say, $1 million to $15 million in revenues are the ones that are always there 70 hours a week doing everything. Like, they're pumping out everything, their entire life, to their business. But didn't you get into business to have a better life? If that is your better life, then great. But sometimes you got to take back and roll back the sort of thoughts of why you got into business. And if your better life means I'd like to have some time with my family, or take my kid to football, or go on a vacation, or maybe take a sabbatical for an entire month or two or six, whatever those are, if you're not living them now, then there's a little bit of work to do. And that goes in alignment with some of the stuff that I also do quite a bit of, which is exit planning. And you know what, in order to set up your business for the proper exit, whether that's to your kids or whether that's to, I've bought and sold businesses and been a business broker, but whether you're trying to get the maximum value for your business when you're selling to another business owner, if your business isn't running on rails, if decisions aren't being made without you, if there isn't process in place that allows things to happen without your involvement, your business isn't as valuable as it should be. So there's work to do. So all of these kind of things are the things that I really spend a lot of time working through with my clients, whether it be in group format or whether it be one-on-one. And it's just something I really like to do, as we pick apart these different things and say, hey, Brett, it takes time to do this stuff, right? Like, it doesn't happen in 2 weeks. It takes time, sometimes years, to get things really in place to that level, depending on the complexity of the business. But where do you start? You start right here, right now. And you start working on this stuff so that it gets to a point where, when you do have to exit, because one thing is for sure, you will exit your business someday, you want it to be in the best possible shape for a proper exit.
And how do you work with clients? So you do group programs as well as one-on-one engagements, correct?
Yeah, I do. And I work with a few different associations, and it's really through their associations that they'll develop groups. And then I moderate the groups and we work through those groups. Like I'll do next generation groups, for example. I've got a group of retailers that I work with that are all either the parents giving their kids the business or the kids taking over the parents' business. And it's all the trials and tribulations around that transfer, around the communication, around the differences, around all sorts of things that happen in family business, even around the actual transaction itself. And so some of that sort of stuff. Other ones are more around just, I've worked with dance school owners, I've worked with retailers, I've worked with insurance agents, all sorts of different things. And it depends on their specific understanding and their needs. But essentially, all of these people are business owners, Brad. And that's the big thing, right? So we want to set up your business so that it's running on its own as much as it can be without you, decisions being made without you, maximizing the potential return upon exit. And you set that up way before you have to exit, not 3 months before you want to exit. A variety of these different things are the things that are strategically in place that a lot of business owners, because they're making the decisions day to day, every day, all this stuff, they don't spend any time on. And so that's where we start to dig in.
Yeah. In a case, I work in a sort of a similar space. I work with people, and one thing that I guess a message that I would like to try to get out to everybody, it's that idea of when people come to, I guess what I'm trying to add is when people come to you, do you get a lot of people that are coming to you in this just frantic mode instead of just reaching out to somebody like yourself when things are fairly good, but you'd like them to be better, as opposed to, oh my God, I don't know what to do. Help me. My life is collapsing around me.
Yeah.
Do you deal with that sort of thing? What is the typical when you're first interacting with somebody? What mental state are they in? What state does their business kind of tend to be in?
Typically, I don't work with startups anymore. If you haven't got 3 years under your belt, I generally don't work with people. Most of my clients are actually doing well and want to do better. And that's as opposed to in a state of the barn's burning and I don't know how I can get out of this.
Right.
I usually don't take those ones any longer.
Yeah.
I coach because I want to coach, not because I have to coach. And
I think those chaotic situations, just, I might not be the right guy for you.
and I may not be, to be honest. Like, I'm quite open in saying that I just don't think I'm your person. And if I can refer somebody, I will. But at the same time, there has to be a commonality there. And for me, usually most of my clients have been at it a while. They usually are okay financially, maybe not as much as they want or whatever the case is, but doing okay. And they usually want more time back. They usually don't want to be making every decision in their business. They're usually frustrated by some of the things that have been going on. They're usually at a ceiling of some kind, ceiling of complexity of some kind, whether it be people or product or wanting to open the next location or whatever the case is, where they can't seem to push through. So it's a matter of getting some stuff out of their heads and onto paper and putting strategic plans together that they can act upon and have their teams act upon through their guidance and all this sort of stuff. I think majority of the clients that I work with are in that state more than, and you know what? Everybody goes through these stages. I had a great client and she's in one of my groups. She is an awesome business owner. She has a few different locations, but literally she had 60% of her team either move, quit, have heart attacks. Like she just had like a clearing of a lot of her people that have been with her like 5 to 10 years. And she's like, what are we going to do? Because that kind of stuff does happen when you're in business, right? And she's been in business a long time. Of course, those things happen and we go through those kind of situations. But at the same time, if she didn't have a lot of stuff set up in advance of when that happened, it would have just been a multiplied factor of the craziness that could have happened, right?
Okay. In What's some of the best advice you can give to an entrepreneur listening to this right now? And they're in that state that, shoot, a lot of us are, right? In the space of, hey, things are going good. Things aren't bad, but boy, I sure would like to figure out what I could do to really get to that next level.
I like to put things in frameworks. Like, I've got 4 A's and the 5 F's and all this different stuff. But one of the ones that I like, it's called, and I mentioned it already, it's called the CPA. And that's not your chartered professional accountancy, but it's the mastery of your communication skills, your process management, and your accountability in your business. And if you think about leadership, what does the leader do? They have to be an awesome communicator. They have to really understand process, because in order for them to get the things done that they need to get done in their business, they have to align process and assign accountability, right? And when we assign accountability, it's not just giving somebody a title, it's actually allocating the accountability to them so that they own it. And that's one of the things that a lot of small business owners don't do. They'll give the titles, but they still make the calls. Then what's the title worth?
Yeah, I can tell you from my experience, I think just one of the biggest struggles that business owners have, entrepreneurs have, is that just that's that idea of including your managers in that process and really getting their buy-in and listening to them. Obviously, you're the owner. You are going to have the ultimate say. That's in question, but it's that idea of, man, if you can really involve your team in the process, that they are then going to take so much more ownership. And as opposed to that idea of, hey, here's this new game plan. Here's what we're going to do. You do this, you do that, you do. And then everybody's just, okay, great, whatever. That's dumb. He's such this, that whole process of enrollment and how much that really impacts just the mental side of things for everybody. I find it just that part makes everything more fun for everybody. I think the employees there appreciate it more. I feel like then they are so much more dedicated and work so much harder because they were part of that decision to determine what the goal is going to be, to determine how we're going to get there and those things. So that part of it, yeah, I'm a huge believer in that side of things, is really when it comes to the accountability and everything, making it always a team effort.
How many, like almost everybody that I start to work, I ask them, show me your accountability chart. Or some people will say organizational chart. I prefer the word accountability chart, but there are a ton of businesses that either don't have one or it hasn't been updated in 3 years. And there's people on that beat that haven't worked for them for 3 years. People need to know who's in charge. And that's part of your job. And I'm talking to you, the listener, that's part of your job as the leader of the organization to ensure that everybody knows who's in charge. And when they need to find something out, they go to the right person, or else what's going to happen? They're going to go to you. And these are the breakdowns that happen in small business every day. So when we start off by building the accountability chart, we start off by understanding what meeting structure looks like and are you having your yearly meetings with your management team? Are you having quarterlies or maybe monthlies? Are you having weeklies? What are you doing on a daily communication structure? In our shoe business, for example, we have a yearly, instead of one-day quarterlies, we've gone to half-day monthlies because we felt we needed that. Whatever the rhythm is that you require, the fact of the matter is, and our rhythm for our monthly is tomorrow. We're going into our monthly tomorrow morning for a half day. We do it off-site and we talk about our yearly goals. We talk about our quarterly goals. We talk about the monthly and we talk about what's going to happen that month. So the other 3 weeks that we do in the month are weekly meetings. They're shorter sessions. They're not a half day. They're about an hour. And we talk about that so that next time we have a monthly, we can talk about whether we've actually accomplished. And then we also have a daily rhythm of how we communicate with each other too. So that's the communication piece. The process is in there and we're always aligning and assigning the accountability to our teams for any of these projects that we have on the go. Who's in charge? Because we need to know who's in charge, because it's not always Pete. Right. And I think that's the most interesting thing. When you start to align and assign accountability, a lot of small business owners I hear will say, I just don't trust them to do it yet. And my sort of philosophy, you were asking for a couple of clips of advice. My philosophy there is, if you've asked yourself that question, or I just don't trust them to hand over authority yet. Is it that you don't trust the person, or is it that you don't trust the process? Because it's usually the process you don't trust. Because if you don't trust the person, they shouldn't be working for you.
Right.
So you got to clean up your process to the point where you can hand it over. That's the work you need to do. It's not, if you're wondering, why don't you trust them or why don't they get it yet? It's probably because you haven't clarified and properly communicated the process of the outcome that you want to happen so that you can then hand it to them.
Yeah. 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 And then let's just some other things that I've seen in the past that seem to be pretty big ones. It's that idea too, a lot of times, of the owner and really looking at, like, how are they spending their time? And I think so many times they get in this way of, this is how my week goes. This is what I need to focus my energy. And it's just taking that step back with them and looking at that calendar and looking at it from a different perspective of, hold on a second. You're spending like 80% of your week grinding away at these menial tasks. That angle of things that in their normal day to day, they would never change. They would never notice. They wouldn't think twice about it. But it's that taking a step back, giving them a minute to just look at it from a different perspective, when they tend to be like, oh, that's a good point. Okay, I see what you're saying there. And it's that idea of working hard. It's not like they're not working. They're working their tail off for sure. But then it's just, well, hold on. Let's just pump the brakes and let's talk about, how are you spending your time throughout the week? And is that the most efficient way to spend your time if you're trying to accomplish these goals?
I've got an exercise that I use. It's called Love It or Leave It. And I always use it with the business owners that I work with, but I encourage them to use it with their teams too. And really, it's outlining everything you do in a given week and then putting them into one of these four quadrants, which is, I love it and I'm good at it. I love it and I'm not good at it. I'm not good at it and I don't love it. So you're laying these things out and it really gives you a perspective, because then you start putting timelines around it. Am I really doing what I love and what I'm good at the majority of my time? When I first did this exercise for myself, I was probably about 50% of the time in that top box, which is where you really want to live most of your life as the business owner. And it's the most productive for your business too. I probably spend 85, 90% of my time there now, as I've structured and I've offloaded these things in the other boxes that I either didn't love doing or I wasn't efficient. Because some things, and I'll use bookkeeping as an example, I'm a good bookkeeper. I just hate doing it.
Right. Yeah.
I got two business degrees. I got a master's. I understand accounting. And I just don't want to balance the visa statement. I just don't want to do it. It drains the energy out of me as I think about having to do that. What do? I pay Michelle, who's my bookkeeper, and she loves doing that. She's a box checker. She loves that stuff, right? And it's her efficiency and it's not mine. Even though I'm capable of doing it, it's not in the best use of my time, in the best use of my time towards the business when I'm in the business. And we can find other people that really love to do some of the things that we don't. That's a really good exercise to work through time management. Another one of the things, I'm not a huge techie, but I do a lot of technologies. One of the things that I work with a lot of my clients right off the bat is email management, because email sucks so much time from so many business owners. So we work through email management and inbox zero in that sort of first few sessions typically. And I cleaned up somebody the other day who had 85,000 email in their inbox. And they now have one every day, or whatever comes in the box, and they clean it up every day. And just think of the stress that 85,000 emails in your inbox poses compared to having whatever came in since last time you opened your inbox. And those kind of things really help people and give them their time back. Like, that probably that person has saved somewhere between 2 and 4 hours a week, I would say, on just looking at their emails.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time over the course of a year.
Yeah, I will say I'm in the middle there. I read some books on that a while ago. I was like, that makes so much sense. But then I've probably got myself halfway there.
Yeah, halfway is better than no. And these are the things by filtering and by using, being efficient around things like email or things like project management boards or whatever, however you're using to communicate within your team and out, internally and externally, whether you use Slack or whether you use any of the different channels out there that people use for talking internally and externally. The big thing is that you're doing it efficiently within your team as the leader so that you get that communication piece, that process piece. And then you're talking about who's doing what, and everybody can see it so that everybody knows who's in charge. And I think those are all really key pieces of running an effective business.
Okay. And then talk to me now about, okay, so I'm an entrepreneur. Yeah. I'm hearing some of these things, right? Gosh, you know what? He's making some really good points. How does the process typically work? How to people getting in touch with you? What does the initial kind of steps of thing look like?
Yeah. If you just go to speaktopete.com, that's my way to get a hold of me. You can just book in with Calendly, an appointment with me. And for half an hour, we'll shoot the breeze about what problems you're having as a business owner and what are some of the things you want to be working on. We'll see if we're a right fit. In fact, I call it a right fit call. So from that perspective, that's really the easiest way. And then we can go through some of the different things that we may look at for your business, because every business owner has a unique sort of set of needs. And it's just a matter of what sort of program is the right one for you.
Yeah.
Where you're at.
Yeah. I think that's great. Because yes, I interact with a lot of different business owners, be it people I'm interviewing on the podcast, you know, yeah. Be it work clients, everything, that type of thing.
And for sure.
Yeah. Everybody out there needs some help. Without a doubt, right?
I haven't interacted
with one person who wouldn't benefit from some sort of help, some sort of thing like that. I think it's great. I think what you're doing is awesome. And I love kind of hearing your methodology. I love the fact that you have that group program thing too, as well as one-on-one. So it offers some different price points, I'm sure, and mm-hmm. different assistance, which I think is really good. Because I think a big thing too, a lot of times if you're just going and looking for some help, right? If you're a business owner that, no, I need some help, and you just start looking, things can be crazy expensive that you come across. $20,000-$30,000 for some initial analysis, which whether you're really going to get much out of that or not was, that's recently I've talked to multiple people in that scenario where they're like, yeah, I know I need some help. I talked to this guy and we wanted this crazy amount of money. Yeah. I can't justify that. Yeah. To me, it just seems like a great.
I think that's the benefit of these podcasts too, Brad. My podcast is called The Business Owner Breakthrough. And although we're on hiatus now, as of the last month or so, there's 150 episodes there that are all evergreen content that are just as current now as when they were recorded. And all of that, that's free content that people can learn all the ways. And there's tips and there's tools and there's downloads and all sorts of things to help people along the way. And I know there's so many good podcasts out there that help people through from that sort of entry level position of maybe they can't afford a coach yet. And that's perfectly fine. So absorb as much as you can and do as much as you can on your own until you can afford one. And then there's going to be people out there that'll be a right fit for you. And I think that's the real important piece here is that there's a ton of content out there. Absorb it and listen to podcasts like this one and listen every week and take what you can. Not only listen though, you have to take the learnings and apply them. And that's the difference between somebody who's going to advance in business ownership and someone who isn't. They're going to actually take the learnings from the people they talk to at their local chamber of commerce or at their convention for their association of whatever business they run or from a podcast like this and take those learnings and actually apply them to their business and see what happens. Because I can tell you a lot of times, good things happen.
Yeah, exactly. And that's accountability piece, right? As an entrepreneur, I'm sure most entrepreneurs I know, they love the content, reading the books, listen to the podcast, doing it. But then without that accountability piece, 90% of it, I can tell you from my own personal thing, I read these books. It's, oh my gosh, that is so wonderful. That is so amazing. But then I have nobody to hold me accountable to it. And then a year later, you flip through it again and you're like, oh, I never implemented that, did I? Oh, yep. I never did that, did I? And that's what Yeah. So that's what I think is amazing, is that accountability piece to make sure that you're putting these things into your business to make the change. So,
you know, one of the other things, Brad, is I'm a certified Kolbe consultant. And have you ever taken your Kolbe test, K-O-L-B-E?
No, assessment? I saw that on your thing, but yeah. I'm not even sure what that is.
Yeah, Kolbe is a great assessment, specifically for business owners. You've heard of a lot of, and probably taken a bunch of the tests along the way, whether it's your DISC or your MBTI or Enneagram or any of these different assessments. But most assessments really are either around IQ, your intelligence, right? Or emotional intelligence, which Enneagram and DISC and a lot of, what do you think about this? What are your feelings towards this? Those are the emotional side of things. The nice thing about Kolbe is it's a conative approach, which means how do you take action? And that's why I love it for business owners, because it really gives you a alignment of how does this person take action? And that's what I want to know as a leader of the business. What's their thought process? What do I need to give them in order for them to make a decision as far as information, as far as checklists, as far as understanding of whether they like to keep things the way they are or whether they like to change or all of these different things. And then we start overlaying that onto the accountability chart. Team dynamics really start to become interesting then.
Yeah. I like that. I'll look into that. Mm-hmm. Pete, it has been amazing talking to you today. Thank you so much, man, for your time. We will make sure, of course, to include all the links so people can go and reach and talk to you. But I think what you're doing is great. I think that any entrepreneur out there, being able to just book in and just try that 30-minute call and see what makes sense, I would highly advise. So thank you very much for your time.
Brad, it's been a pleasure. Make it a great day.
All right. Thanks, Pete. All right.
Thank you for listening to Executing the Vision. If you'd like to be a guest, go to emergelabs.us and click on the podcast page. If you like what you heard, please share the episode and subscribe. Ratings and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. You can find us on Instagram at brad.emergelabs, as well as X, Facebook, and LinkedIn, where we strive to provide valuable information on business and life. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show and what you'd like to see in future episodes. Thank you again and have a great day.